Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I am Giuseppe Porcaro, Head of Outreach and Governance, and I'm here with Alicia Garcia Herrero, Senior Fellow at Bruegel. Hi, Alicia.
How are you, Giuseppe?
I'm fine. And in this episode of The Sound of Economics Live, we have the honor to host Dr. Gary Liu, who is a leading economist in China, known for his focus on China's economic reform. Welcome to The Sound of Economics.
Hello, thank you.
Dr. Liu, where are you located at the moment?
I'm now in Shanghai, one of the biggest cities in China.
How is it the situation with the COVID-19 pandemic over there?
You know, China is still locked the border from all airplanes from other countries. But inside China, in big cities like Shanghai, everything is getting back to normal. If you go to the supermarket, the stores, the department, even the restaurant, everything is getting normal. However, the school is not still fully open. And also, if you go to the restaurants, obviously there are much less people than you. So I think people are still a little bit cautious.
Here in Europe also, we are slowly reopening the activities in the cities, but also the borders are closed as well. Dr. Liu, you have built a high-level expertise on financial research and reform. China's financial sector has grown massively in size and has become systematically important. The market capitalization of Shanghai and Shenzhen stock exchanges have expanded from 67% of GDP in 2013 to 138% of GDP in 2019. In addition, it has also become much more complex with increasing systemic risk. The close relationship between banks and state-owned corporates and local governments have often led to misallocation of credit, not necessarily in favor of the private sector. The cyclical, beyond the structural deceleration that the Chinese economy is undergoing, also due to the COVID-19 pandemic, which we just mentioned before, is also one of the key risks that the Chinese financial system is facing. And at the same time, China has decided to open up its financial sector to foreign competition, especially after US President Donald Trump's visit to China in November 2017. China has accelerated the pace for financial opening with several announcements, one quicker than the other. The key change includes the relaxation of foreign ownership in life insurance, securities, funds, and future companies. From the global asset allocation perspective, it makes sense for international banks to increase their focus on China, especially under an increasingly low-rate environment. So could you tell us what exactly has been the rationale of such decision, and summarize also for those who might be less familiar with the topic, what exactly has been decided and its wider implications?
Well, the financial opening is really a very important topic for China's reform. I think you mentioned all the key points that on the one hand, we see China's financial system is growing bigger and bigger. Given the huge size of the Chinese economy, that's not surprising. On the other hand, we see a lot of problems with China's financial system. One problem is the inefficiency in allocating the resources, especially the state sector and the local government, they get too much credit. Their share in banking loans are much bigger, much higher than their contribution to the GDP. And we see the private sector has been suffering, struggling for financing difficulties, years and years. Secondly, we have to say that China's overall debt level is too high. If you still remember that 5 years ago in 2015, the Chinese government put forward a slogan for deleveraging because they realized if they cannot control the debt, it will lead to crisis sooner or later. However, even the government spent huge efforts on this task. over the past 3 years. We see the overall debt, including the government debt, corporate debt, housing debt, household debt, continue to rise in total, continue to rise. So it's difficult, very difficult for Chinese government to control the debt without slow down the economy. You know, Chinese government has been focusing on stabilizing the economy so much. So it's something like a dilemma. Thirdly, we see that Chinese, especially the internet, we call the fintech, has been booming in China, led by Alibaba and other internet giants. At the beginning, those fintech companies, you know, exert huge pressure on the financial sector, especially the big banks. We see the money quickly ran out of the banks to Alibaba and other internet companies. And later on, the government takes some actions. They expose more and more restrictions on Alibaba. We see the Alibaba, the speed of Alibaba, the end financial has been slowing down in the recent several years. Given all these problems, China also has to solve another issue, which is financial opening. Over the past years, China has been very slow in opening the financial sector. I think it's primarily because of the overall philosophy of the Chinese government. You know, in China, stabilization means everything. They put this before everything else. And the financial system is something like volatile. So for the Chinese leaders, they have a little bit worry about the financial opening, especially when they see the Asian financial crisis in 1997, the 2008 financial crisis in US, they realize that China is lucky because we don't open the financial system too quickly, like Southeast Asian countries. That explains why the Chinese financial opening has been slowing over the past two decades. If you look at the data, it's very clear. When China joined WTO in 2001, the market share of foreign banks in China is around 1.8% in the Chinese banking system. Everybody at that time, they believe when China joined WTO, the foreign banks will take a big kick because in theory, the foreign banks are very experienced. They have a very good system and they know financial innovation. So they have every reason to take the market share. However, if you look at the current data, the market share of foreign banks in China has dropped, not increased, dropped to around 1.4. So this number is a little bit embarrassing even for the Chinese leaders. For example, the CBRC and also the PBOC leader, Guo Shuqin, he publicly acknowledged that the market share of foreign banks in China is too low. Of course, in the recent years, 2 or 3 years, we see China has been accelerating the financial opening pace. I think it's because of two reasons. The major driving factor for that is the pressure from US. Donald Trump became the president, he threatened to have some trade war with China at the beginning of 2018. So in that year, after China realized there will be a tension between China and the US, so Chinese leader decide to do something. One of the key action is to accelerate the financial opening. As you already mentioned, China has changed a lot in the restrictions for foreign financial institutions in China. This is the one of the key factor. The second thing is, in China, we also have a debate. So why we have so many bad loans? Why the debt in China is so big? Why the private company cannot get financing? One of the explanation is we do not have enough competition in the banking sector. We have many banks, maybe too many banks. If you look at the branches, is everywhere. But if you look at the market share, it's almost all dominated by, absolutely dominated by the big five, the state companies. They are super companies, super banks. And those banks are very low efficiency. They don't have innovation motivation. And also they have monopoly power. So China realized we need to try to encourage more competition. At the beginning, China tried one experiment with the private banks. I think about 5 years ago, China approved around 20 private new banks in China. Maybe this is a very small number for, you know, US and European countries, but for China, this is a big breakthrough. Because it's extremely difficult to set up a new bank, private bank in China. But 5 years ago, Chinese leader decided to introduce more private banks, including Alibaba and Tencent. They each set up a new private banks. At the beginning, we have very high expectation for those banks. But later on, their performance is much lower than the expectation. I think it's because even they have their advantage, like innovation and internet, you know, technology. However, the Chinese regulators still have too much restriction on the private banks. For instance, even Alibaba and Tencent, they have a huge number of internet users. However, according to the Chinese banking rule, regulatory rule, the users cannot open a banking account online. So if you want to create a new account, you have to go to the offline banking branches. So this means the Alibaba and Tencent, they cannot attract deposits. It's difficult. And I think that's why China realized that probably we need to give more opportunity to the foreign banks. And by doing that, probably we can also help China, because more activity of foreign banks to China, at least in theory, they can enhance the quality for competition and banking services in China, can partly solve the problem of the low efficiency of the Chinese financial system. Having said all these things, I think we need to realize that the changing of the Chinese financial opening will be a long process. Now, when we're talking about the financial opening, we are talking about two things. One thing is what I have talking about is to allow more foreign banks, foreign financial institutions to do activities in China. So that's no problem. China is already doing that. But the second part is much more sensitive, which is the capital account open, which means the short-term, you know, capital flow in and flow out. I think if you looking at the speeches of the Chinese regulators like Zhou Xiaochuan, Wu Xiaolin, many influential persons, I think they are very cautious in opening the capital account. And also, if you read the articles by like Joseph Stiglitz, and they are, you know, very influential in the U.S., they also don't think it's a good idea for a country like China, the current state like China, to fully open the capital account. So when China doing the making progress in the capital account opening, we are very cautious. We are trying to do some manageable experiment, like the Shanghai Hong Kong Stock Connect, the Shanghai maybe the London Stock Connect, this kind of thing, because it's manageable. So my brief conclusion is that China will be more open, more and more open in the financial sector. The foreign financial institutions, they should realize that China's financial system is a big opportunity for them. But for the capital account, that's a big problem. For instance, like for Warren Buffett, why he did not invest a lot in China? I think one reason is that if you invest in China, it's difficult to get your money out because of the capital account control, right? So that's one key restriction. Without this concern, if you want to benefit from the financial booming in China, I mean for the Chinese customers, Chinese clients, for sure that will be a big opportunity. Because China is one of the most rapidly growing consuming economy, and the market is growing bigger and bigger. And on the other hand, the financial service is still at a very low level. We don't have enough, service for the individuals, consumers, and SMEs. We need more financial service, financial innovation. One challenge is, maybe there are two challenges if you want to benefit from this opportunity. One is that the financial regulation has always been a problem because in theory, China promised to treat all institutions fairly, but in reality, it will be very different because China, the transparency of the regulation is not very high. And also, in China, guanxi, interpersonal relationship is always important. For instance, if the regulator feel not happy, so when they inspect your banking branches, they will be very unfriendly. So they will treat you badly, right? They can always find excuses. But if they feel happy, they think that you are my friend. So everything can be solved. So that's the Chinese culture. The last point is, the second challenge is, if you come to China, you will be a little bit surprised because China is almost a no-cash society. Maybe China is the most advanced economy in that. We see most people now, we don't use credit. We only use WeChat, WeChat Pay, Alipay, and those things. And also, because the e-commerce is so highly growing in China, so the people, the Chinese people, they are very, very sophisticated in using the internet technology, the mobile phone. So for the foreign financial institutions, you need to realize that China is one of the leading internet financial area in the world. So if you want to benefit from this opportunity, thank you.
I would like to ask as a reaction to your presentation, to Alicia, her take on this opening, and especially what explain to us according to you what can foreign banks expect to find from your perspective? Should they grab this opportunity? How they should grab this opportunity? What are the challenges that Gary outlined, viewed from the other side, the other perspective of the actors involved?
Thank you, Giuseppe. I first need to thank Gary for his frankness. I want to say this loud and clear. We really need these frank conversations between European and Chinese scholars. It's very important, more than ever. And this is why I want to spend 1 second thanking you again.
Thank you.
Because this is not common anymore. So we need to foster it. And this is the first thing I'm going to say. However, I need to move forward to the debate. The first idea is that I can't agree more. China's opening up may have come as partially as a response to the US pressure. That pressure has been there since China joined the WTO, whether this was a compulsory decision that China had to pursue or not, i.e. opening up. I won't get into that because, frankly, it's irrelevant. It's like going into who, the COVID-19 origin is the same thing. Let's move on. Whether China had to open or not, the realities that China now wants to open. And I think beyond the pressure, because the pressure has been there since 2001. So why now? And you said it very rightly, because it is actually in China's interest. It's, of course, in everybody's interest. I will go in a minute to explaining what is it in for us, meaning foreign banks, European banks. But before I say that, I want to explain why it is in China's interest. And nothing wrong. I mean, if it's in everybody's interest, even better, yeah, because it will be more wholehearted than other things that are happening in the current economic sphere, I mean, between the US or even Europe and China. So it so happens that we finally end up with a very specific opening measure, which is win-win, supposedly, you know, everybody will win. But I want to work a little bit more on that idea of why it's good for China. And you said very rightly that there is an efficiency issue in China's banking sector. It's actually measurable because the return on assets, for banks has been coming down. And there is a lot of, I would even go before the opening up to the 20 banks that you refer to, most of which internet banks, local banks or joint stock commercial banks, city commercial banks tried very hard to compete with the bigger banks. And the reality is that for regulatory reasons, even it's very, very hard. They don't have the same access to collateral to pledge at the PBOC. The cost of funding because of that, as you know, the money market is very constrained for them. Only 1/3 of their funding has to come from the money market. There is now this idea of explicit deposit insurance, which makes them, basically depositors know that their deposit in these smaller banks are capped in terms of insurance, which is not the case for state-owned commercial banks, for the large five banks which you mentioned. So there's a number of reasons why, let alone foreigners, even private banks in China, and I'm not even referring to the internet banks, which may have, an advantage in terms of technology, but the other banks can't compete either. So the competition issue is a massive problem for a country, in my humble opinion, which has excess savings, because it basically means that those excess savings are allocated very inefficiently, especially because you happen to have capital controls, meaning no choice. Because if the capital account were open, frankly speaking, these banks, I don't know what they would do. People would say, sorry, I don't like your allocation of my savings. Ciao, I'm going somewhere else. I am investing, in whatever asset abroad. This can't happen. So basically, this is why this problem is becoming urgent, extremely urgent for China, because growth is coming down structurally. So as this happens, by the way, even savings, the level, of course, slowly but steadily. So you want to use your savings. We don't know for how long they're going to be there as population ages, etc. You want to use them as efficiently as possible. So this is, but I want to add one more reason why I think China is opening up. And that might not be as positive for those who may access the Chinese banking sector or the financial sector as a whole, which is that what Giuseppe started with, pervasive systemic risk. So it's like, it's a moral hazard problem or even an adverse selection problem. Yeah, you get into a market where there's a lot of assets, you don't know how bad or how good they are, and you need to choose from those assets. And it's very hard for foreign banks to do that. So I think that foreign banks are needed not only to increase efficiencies, which is great, win-win, if I may say so, if they have a superior technology or, they can screen clients or you name it, I frankly think that is not so much the superior technology, it's really market access. If it were equal for everybody, then even Chinese private banks could do it. So my point is, even if we get in, I'm not sure we solve the problem, because it's an entrenched problem related to the ownership of the bank and what the banks can do for the leadership. If private banks in China can't solve the problem, I want to know whether foreign banks will be able to solve the problem. Because in itself, I mean, I just doubt it. But beyond that, the point I want to make is that for foreign banks, what we know is that non-performing loans, whether recorded as such or, you know, special mention loans, you name it, yeah? I mean, they're circulating in the system. We need to deal with this thing without really prior information. This might be a great business for, and this is what we are seeing, the guys who are getting in China are those who are very, very good at stress, you know, stress assets, cleaning up. We are not seeing retail banks coming in. I only know of one example, ING, and this is, you know, digital banking, and it's a minor cost in terms of capital. Why? Because it looks, how would I say, it looks difficult, if I may say, and not only because of the competition, but because of the underlying, yeah, the type of systemic risk that is in the system at this current juncture. COVID-19 only increases this risk. So I can understand that China in the latest announcements is trying to push it, because the interest from the other side is actually shrinking as we speak, as they see the increasing systemic risk in the financial sector. So this is the trick, that win-win on paper, and rightly so, might not be so much the case. Just one number, and I end here because I know that this might have been too long. Beyond the fact that, indeed, foreign banks have remained very slow, we've not been able to catch up with the massive growth of China's banking sector, about 300% of GDP in bank assets, you know. We need massive amount of capital, which we barely have, especially to allocate in China. But beyond that, our cost structure in China, ours meaning foreign banks, is much worse than Chinese banks. Cost to income ratios are double as bad. Return on assets is half of the average of Chinese banks. So this is either we are really very poor banks in terms of management, or there is some market access issue in China. And that's the beginning of the story. Will we put more capital, given how costly capital has become since 2008, and I have to say maybe even more so after COVID, in a country for which our cost to income is double and our return on assets is half? And I'm here playing the part of foreign banks, obviously, because that's what I was asked to do. So that's it. It's not certain, in other words, that other than very specific asset management venues for stress assets, will really embark in this opening up that China is pursuing.
Thank you, Alicia, for the extensive reply and the cautionary tale that you are trying to bring into this discussion. And before I give the voice again back to Gary for reacting to this, I would like to add on a couple of questions from our listeners, because they go more or less in the same kind of direction of the kind of challenges that Alicia has been trying to point out. For example, I have a question from Pepe, who is asking indeed about the non-performing loans as well. So that's why I'm saying those things can perhaps be taken together in your reaction. Pepe is asking, how about NPLs in the Chinese economy, that especially state-owned banks sit on? They surely need to be dealt with before further capital account opening proceeds. And then Enrique is also asking about the other question that somehow Alicia tangentially has been tackled, which is the issue of digital services. And Enrique is asking why foreign competition is good in the banking sector in China, but it is not much allowed in digital services when money is mostly a digital asset everywhere. So I wanted to put also these two questions together because I thought it was kind of relevant to take the temperature of our listeners regarding the issue and give the ball back to Gary for his own comments.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Alicia, for your very frank comments. I think you raised a lot of very insightful issues from the practical perspective. Yes, for many years, you know, the foreign banks, I think they have very high expectation to take the Chinese opportunity, but the reality is always very difficult. For the coming years, I think the situation may be continue to be quite similar, right? There are very substantial issues need to be solved, not only for foreign banks but also for the private banks in China. One key issue is the Chinese SOE system is too strong, too powerful. SOE now in China, now they contribute only 1/4 of the Chinese GDP, but they control, I think, about 60% or even somebody estimated 70% of the financial resources. So it's very natural for the foreign banks to stay away from the SOE in China because they don't trust them. And also, even you want to have business with the SOE, it's very difficult because usually the SOE, they have very long-term relationship with the state banks, right? So that's one key obstacle. The second thing maybe is an obstacle, but also opportunity. In China, one long-term challenge for the foreign banks or also private banks in China is that you don't have branches. If you don't have branches, you don't have clients, you don't have deposits. But currently, we know that many small banks, even medium banks in China, are running into trouble because they have too much NPL. The official NPL is only 1.8 around that, but the real number should double or even triple. Right, so it's much bigger, and we have already seen several banks in Inner Mongolia, in Shandong, and other provinces. They ran into insolvency problem. So in theory, this could be opportunity for newcomers, like foreign banks or private banks. You can take it over, right? Because they already have some branches, some resources, but again, the Chinese government, they don't solve the problem openly, publicly, right? They don't usually they just ask a big bank to take over the troubled small banks because it's a very easy way to manage. They don't need to disclose every information to the public. They don't want to create a panic. So that's a pity. That's a regret. I have to say. If China can give more fair opportunity when China try to deal with the failed banks to every bank in China, probably that will be good opportunity for private bank and foreign banks. And also, I think you mentioned the digital services. I think China is already in the front line in the world in digitalization. Nobody can reverse the process. So this actually is good news for newcomers because you don't need to set up branches. It's very costly. There is no need to do that. The key problem, again, as I mentioned, is that currently, the Chinese regulator still they don't allow online banking accounts set up. They don't allow that. So that's a big obstacle for newcomers. But even if they allow that for foreign banks, because every foreign bank, you don't have enough internet users. You have only a small number compared to Alibaba and Tencent. So you need to learn how to work together with the internet giants in China. It is the Alibaba and Tencent in China. They really have the resources. They control the internet users. Of course, they also have their own financial services, business, but they also serve as a platform. They want to work together with all banks. If you look at Alibaba, even and Jingdong, JD.com in China, and Tencent, they are already having some collaboration with the banks, especially small banks, because small banks, they don't have enough clients. They have a more incentive to work with the internet giants. So I think that that's probably one thing they need to do. The last point is that Alicia mentioned the cost structure. I think that's a problem. So in China, we are a very huge population, right? There are after 40 years of reform and opening up, I think there are already enough well-educated, experienced financial elite, right? So if the foreign banks, you want to be more flexible, you want to control your cost, I think it's really a meaningful way to try to be more localized. You can hire more local people. Of course, you can still control from the headquarters. By localization, we mean not only reducing the cost, but also you can get in more localized knowledge, more localized relationship, guanxi. It's much easier for a Chinese face, to network in China with the regulators. So I think probably that's one possible solution. Yes, it's nothing is easy. As we always say that in China, nothing is easy, but everything is possible. That's always true.
We are going towards the end of these episodes, and I would like just to ask Alicia a very, very, very short final comment on these words. I know the discussion could go on, and we could stay much longer, but yeah, the time is limited, and also we want to continue this conversation in the future with Gary and in another setting as well. So Alicia, do you have any last remarks?
I'm not going to summarize, because I think frankly Gary was crystal clear. I'm only going to add one dimension for the next session for Bruegel to think about in terms of China's financial sector, and this is about financial decoupling. I think we really need to start talking about financial decoupling. U.S. The listed Chinese companies, they listed from the stock market, pension funds, U.S. public pension funds not being allowed to invest in China, China's reaction to this, potential even sanctions. All of this is happening as we speak. It's a very important topic. For us as Europeans, the question is, what's Europe going to do? So I just put it out there for the next session, and that's my final word. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. You basically throw a little bomb on the playground. Gary, thank you so much, really, for your participation. And I want just to echo Alicia about the fact that you were really, really clear. I'm not an expert on financial markets, and I have to say that I've been learning quite a lot about what has been going on in China. And I'm sure that our listeners as well have been appreciating a lot your overview. I would like also to remind that on our website, we have a special section on the works that our scholars have on the Chinese economy and on EU-China relations, exactly to echo what Alicia just said. You can click on it on our homepage, www.bruegel.org. Until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you, see you next time. Bye-bye.